and welcome. I'm Goblin, and tonight we are going to read stories from the website Liminal Earth. This website features submissions of first-hand paranormal encounters, and what's a little different about it is that in addition to submitting a story, people also tag the location of the experience. So, in the video version of this episode, I'll be showing Google Street View of the location given for each story as I read it for you. If you're just listening to this on a podcast platform and you want to watch the video, you can do so by going to my YouTube channel, which is linked in the description. I do want to give a heads up that the previous videos in my Liminal Earth series up to this point, of which there are 11, are only available on YouTube. Going forward, I will be uploading them to both YouTube and on podcast apps. But if you want to check out the previous videos in this series, they are compiled in a playlist on my YouTube channel. Anyway, tonight we are going to read a handful of first-hand experiences. And in between the stories, I'll do a little poking around in the locales of the stories to see what other interesting things we can find. This series always proves to be a fun and cozy time for me, so if you are ready, let's get started. The first story we're going to read was submitted by Brianna A. and took place in Webster, North Dakota in June of 2014, and it's called Webster Countryside. When I was about 14 and my sister was 9, we lived out in the middle of the country in an old farmhouse. One day, we were playing across the road in the windbreak, and I had quickly gone back home to use the restroom. I made my way back outside, and just as I was on the edge of the road about to cross, I heard my sister scream. Not the playful scream you'd hear from a kid around that age, but an awful, gut-wrenching help that made me immediately dash into the trees where we were playing and call out for her. I spent some time in there looking for her, but ultimately ran back inside to call my parents, as they weren't home at the time. That's when I saw her sitting on the couch, watching TV, totally fine. I had asked her what happened and if she was okay, and she just sat there, confused about my worry. I had told her that I had heard her scream, but she denied doing so, and said she actually had gone back inside right after I had, when I had left to use the restroom earlier. She hadn't gone back outside after that, and somehow, I just hadn't seen her. I'm certain I heard my sister's voice coming from those trees, but what I heard using it was not my sister. Stories with voice mimics I find to be particularly creepy, and I'm sure I'm not alone in that. What the particular phenomenon is, who knows? I reflexively wanted to categorize it as a doppelganger, but no one has really seen, so I guess it probably isn't. A kind of variation of doppelganger from Scandinavian folklore called the Vardiger, while sometimes seen, can also just manifest via smells, like a perfume, or sounds a person makes, like footsteps. Although I don't generally think it's a person's voice. Another difference between a Vardiger and a doppelganger is that a Vardiger isn't inherently considered a bad omen. It's termed as a pre-arrival spirit, also called arrival cases, spiritual predecessors, and spirits of the living, and it's almost like a person's psychic energy jumps ahead of them. An example of this would be a wife is in the kitchen cooking dinner and she hears her husband come in from work in the other room. Hears the door open, keys jingling, footsteps, but he never comes in the kitchen to greet her. 5 minutes later, she hears the sound repeat themselves, but this time her husband comes into the kitchen to say hello. Turns out, he never came home the first time she heard his sounds, and this is what would be considered arrival cases. So, just hearing a voice, almost seems to be some sort of mimicry, perhaps. In this story, it's creepy that the witness heard their little sister cry out in distress when nothing was wrong, and it wasn't her who screamed. I also wanted to take a moment and look to see what other haunted things I could find in North Dakota. And so I did so via the Shadowlands Haunted Places Index and hauntedplaces.org. Of course, there's your run-of-the-mill hauntings and crybaby bridges and things like that, but I did find a couple of brief stories that include men with hooves that I thought were interesting. One is about a place called Kelly's Bar in Cannonball, North Dakota. The simple story goes that a tall man was seen at this establishment who was wearing a black trench coat, and apparently he had hooves and possibly a long tail as well. He was seen going into the bathroom and never came out. Another legend is about an entity known as the Hoofman, who lurks on Highway 22, haunting a bridge that's known as Lost Bridge. There wasn't really any details given about the being other than what you can glean from his moniker, but apparently he can be seen on the road or approach your window if your car breaks down. There's also several legends of water spirits and serpents inhabiting the lakes of this state, as told in the stories of the local tribes. There's even one really interesting article I found that interviews a local elder and discusses the spirits that reside in Devil's Lake, which is actually very close to the story that we read. So if you know of any interesting legends or have any personal experiences in North Dakota, do let me know. For now, let's move on to our next story. This one was submitted by Marty and took place in Indianapolis, Indiana, in August 2018, and it's called Firefly Entity. We were on the back porch watching the fireflies, and my partner nudged me and pointed into our neighbor's yard. We both saw the fireflies grouped into a tall humanoid shape, taller than a shed, and it slowly walked across the lawn and stepped over the fence into our yard. We felt very weird and unsettled by it and went inside before it got any closer. So that's a simple, brief story, but it did remind me of a story I read recently in the Blue Fairies episode I did where something similar happened. And I have to mention that it also reminded me of one of my favorite movies, Princess Mononoke, that I'm referencing on a near constant basis, of the forest spirit when he's in his Nightwalker state. It's kind of like this luminous blue humanoid form, giant though, taller than the trees. So once again, I did the same thing as I did for the previous story, where I poked around the area for other interesting legends, and I did find one. This story is called The House of the Blue Lights, and it goes that a mansion tucked amongst the trees on a wooded back road of Indianapolis was owned by a man named Skiles Test. Mr. Test was said by locals to be an eccentric who loved the color blue, and he would decorate his house and property with blue Christmas lights. But the strangest part of this legend is that it began to circulate that Skiles had lost his beloved wife in some sort of accident, and in a strange gesture of grief, chose to display her corpse in a glass coffin, propped up in a tower window and draped in blue lights. This story, which began circulating in the 1950s, spurred droves of teenagers to drive up past the house at night and see if they could see this gruesome display for themselves, which I can't blame them. I'm sure I would do the same thing. So there is some truth to this story, but like all urban legends, quite a bit of fiction as well. Skiles Test was a real person who lived from 1889 to 1964, and he did inhabit a large house and sprawling property off of Fall Creek road. The part about the blue lights is also true. He did have an affinity for the color blue, and different sources of blue illumination dotted his land. But the part about the glass coffin is, unsurprisingly, fake. He actually had multiple marriages, and all the women outlived him. The house and all the buildings on the property are gone now, but you can see from the photos that the mansion didn't even have a tower. It is a great story, for sure. A good bit of fun, I'm sure, to drive by and see the ghostly blue lights twinkling off in the woods. Unfortunately, though, a lot of people took the legend tripping way too far, and by the mid-50s, teenagers were terrorizing the Test property, swimming in his pool, going into his house, even harassing the stray cats that Skiles gave refuge to. Towards the end of his life, Test even stopped sleeping at his house at night because the mayhem was just too much to deal with. The house is now gone. Skiles has passed away, and all that remains of the legend of the House of Blue Lights is a nature park in his name, which is on the location of the original house, and also a whole host of memories from locals who grew up with the legends. All right, so take a break from legend tripping for now and continue on with some more quick creature sightings. This next story was submitted by Lane and took place in Gordonsville, Tennessee in June of 2016. It's called Long-Limbed Creature. Back in 2016, we lived in a heavily wooded area down a long driveway. Our nearest neighbors were at least a mile off. My sibling had told me that when she was outside at night on our front porch, our dog at the time looked up into a tree and growled. When she looked up too, she saw an extremely pale, long-limbed creature perched on top of a branch and looking into my room. It didn't seem to notice or care that they were there. She slowly got up and walked back inside. At first, I didn't believe her, but it did freak me out sufficiently because the past few weeks I had become increasingly paranoid that something was watching me. And I always made sure to close my curtains at night, which I hadn't done before. A few days after she had told me about what she saw, it was nighttime, and I went to look out my window, and I saw exactly what she had described, an extremely pale, long-limbed person with very long fingers. Almost as soon as I looked at it, it looked at me, then sprinted off super fast. I'm glad we moved out of the woods. So, I looked on the Shadowlands Haunted Places Index, as I did for the previous stories, and I didn't find any hauntings in this particular part of Tennessee. I also looked at a thread on the cryptozoology subreddit asking for information on any cryptids specific to Tennessee, so I'm going to read a couple comments from that. One comment says, "I'm in southern Middle Tennessee, and I can remember my grandmother and her siblings talking about something they called a paddy whistle. It was half man, half bird, I believe. It would chase the wagons sometimes, they said, and whatever it was, they were terrified of it. It would perch up in trees. I wish I could remember if this thing flew or what. I assume so. I really wish I could remember more. I would hear the older folks talking about it 40 years ago at family reunions. My grandmother's mother was Native American, and maybe it came from that culture, but they absolutely believed in it and claimed to have seen it." Interesting that this creature, the paddy whistle, was said to perch in trees, and the being in the last story we read was up in a tree as well, although the physical descriptions don't really match up. I did try to do a quick search of the name or the term paddy whistle, but I didn't come back with anything. Weirdly, another being with the word whistle in its name comes up in another comment from Paradiva86, who writes, "Okay, so I'm from lower Middle Tennessee, and my grandmother used to tell me the story about a creature she called a whistling jack. The story she told me was that the Whistling Jack was a large bipedal black panther. She said that it would sound like a woman crying, and that was how it would lure victims into the woods. My grandmother claimed that one evening, when she was around 12 or 13, she was home alone with her brothers and sister when they heard what she thought was a woman crying outside the house. She said she looked out the windows, but couldn't see anyone outside. The sound continued, and then she discovered that it was coming from around the fireplace and sounded as if someone was stuck inside the chimney. She said that she went outside and looked up at the roof of the house where the chimney came out and saw a large black panther walking on two legs on the roof, and it had been peering down into the chimney. My grandma ran back inside, locked the doors and windows, and closed the chimney. She used furniture and blankets to further block off the fireplace and hid all of her siblings in a closet until their parents arrived back home. This story has stuck with me as I've grown up, and I've recently been doing research trying to see if anyone else has ever heard of a Whistling Jack or if there were other similar sightings, and so far, I've not really found anything. That is such a creepy story. The paddy whistle and the Whistling Jack seem to have different physical descriptions, one being a bird-human hybrid and the other being a bipedal black panther. But both very intriguing stories passed down through the family. All right, let's move on to our next creature sighting. This one was submitted by Connor W. and took place in Decatur, Illinois in October 2020. And it's called Goblin Sighting. The other night, I was with my wife over at her parents' house when she bolted out the back door and onto the deck in dead silence. When she came back in, she said that she had seen a short black creature run across the neighbor's yard on two legs. This sighting was followed up by her brother and mom saying that they had seen a similar creature run across the road on the way to Thanksgiving dinner. They described it as a goblin, similar in shape and size to the elf from the Harry Potter movies. I went out to look, but unfortunately did not observe anything myself. Well, I think I speak for everyone, or a lot of people, when I say that we love a goblin sighting around here on my channel. I have a playlist on YouTube dedicated just to goblin encounters, if you're interested. So I don't have any haunted places or cryptids from Decatur that I'd like to highlight or share right now. But I do have another story from Liminal Earth that took place in Decatur just down the road from this story. So let's go ahead and read that. This was submitted by John E. L. Tenney and occurred in March of 2008. It's called The Diner. Due to a car accident, I was stuck in Decatur, Illinois for a few days while repairs were made. During the 4 days I was stranded, I walked to and ate at a diner twice. On the day my car was finally fixed, I decided to go to the diner for one last meal. I drove around for an hour and could not find the diner. After retracing my steps and asking around the city, I'm left with the ridiculous conclusion that the diner and the people I had interacted with in the diner either no longer exist, never existed, or exist in a variant of this reality I am currently experiencing. All right, so I do love stories of disappearing places, vanishing places. I have a video I did quite a while ago. I think it was last October or something, but it's all about vanishing houses, and that would be available on my YouTube channel if you wanted to take a look at that. But also, at the end of this post on Liminal Earth, the poster, John Tenney, included a link to a podcast where he had recounted this story as well. And it's a pretty short recording. I think it was around 11 minutes. So I went and listened to that, and I don't know if anyone possibly recognized the name of this person, John E.L. Tenney. I didn't, and I wasn't aware of him, but apparently he is a paranormal investigator or a paranormal researcher, I should say. And it has been for a while. Very established, has an IMDb page and books written, and I believe he's had multiple podcasts, it seems like. This one that he recorded the story on was called Realm of the Weird. I don't think he's still recording for it. So, I listened to that, and basically he says that he was in Decatur for actually a paranormal convention when he got into a car accident and had to get repairs done on his car. So, he stuck there for a couple of days, and he asked hotel staff for suggestions on places to eat. So, since he doesn't have a car, he ends up walking to this diner and eats there and talks with people and even gets people's names. Goes there twice, which I thought was very interesting, that he went there not just one time, but twice, because he was stuck there two or three nights. So, in the post on Liminal Earth, he says that after he got his car back, he wanted to go have one last meal, so he tried to go and find the diner, and he couldn't. In the recording on the Realm of the Weird, he said he went to the diner the second time, and he knew his car was going to be fixed the next day, so he wasn't going to be back. So, he said goodbye to everyone at the diner who he met. I guess he had met a few regulars and the staff, and so he said his goodbyes. And so, I'm not exactly sure how he came upon the realization that the diner didn't exist, because they are kind of two different stories. And I'm not saying that he's lying or insinuating that. It's easy to misremember details, and especially if you have to put it into some kind of like a neat, tidy narrative form. And this happened some years back in 2008. So most people who submit to Liminal Earth, I just have their name or whatever kind of alias that they put down, if they put one down. But since this was an actual person who you could potentially get a hold of, I sent an email to the address he has put down on the YouTube channel where he posted the Realm of the Weird podcast, and he didn't get back to me, but it's very possible that he doesn't check that email, especially if he doesn't record that podcast anymore. Some of the questions I would have liked to have asked are if he remembered the name of the diner, because he didn't say, and of course when he realized the diner didn't exist. Also, he said he had asked the hotel staff for recommendations on places to eat, so I was wondering if the diner was one of those recommendations, or if he just came upon it while he was out walking and looking for somewhere to eat. And then if he asked people about the diner after he realized it wasn't there, which I think he said he did in the Liminal Earth post, but I'd be curious to hear more about that, if it was the hotel staff he asked, or this and that. And if he had any updates, because at the end of his recording, like I said, he doesn't give the name of the diner, but he does give the names of the people that he met at the diner. He has their full names in some cases. So he asks people if they have any information on those people or those names and if they actually exist or whatnot. It would be cool to know the name of the diner, because what if it was a place that had existed previously in that area, and it was some kind of time slip or like a ghost diner? So that brings us into, what was this? Was this a time slip? Was it some kind of different reality? Very interesting. I love stories like this. And speaking of, there's a very similar story that I was made aware of via the Boggart and Banshee podcast, which is hosted by Simon Young and Chris Woodyard. And this story was printed in issue number 69 of the Fortean Times magazine, which is from June 1993. The article is written by Tony Clark, who says that in 1956, he was in Iran on business as a civil engineer. While driving home between Manjil and Tehran, they began to get very hungry and were desperate to find somewhere to eat. But they would have to wait until they reached a somewhat sizable town to have any sort of option, because most towns along the way, where this very rural area, would just kind of have a basic tea shop. At some point, they drive through a very small village, and remarkably, there's a restaurant. and the owner very hospitably greets them and seats them and feeds them what the author describes as one of the best meals he has ever had, and he remembers each particular course and everything he ate. And he also finds that the cost of this sumptuous meal is incredibly cheap. So before they get back on the road, him and his colleague, they thank the owner, who tells them to come again and tell their friends. And Tony does tell people about his meal and is met with much disbelief. And it seems like it would be impossible that such a fine restaurant could exist in such a small village and have the ability to acquire the range of foods that were served there. And so it was that upon making the same trip 3 months later and stopping in the same village, which had an unmistakable natural landmark that helped him identify it, there was no diner. He even asked a local who said that no such place had existed in the 40 years that he had resided in that village. So, was this a time slip? It's the same thing as the last story, although this one seems like it would have to be kind of like a future time slip. How do you explain these cases of phantom diners? Are they time slips? Are they some sort of interdimensional crossover? Fascinating stuff. So, that is going to be all for tonight. I hope you enjoyed the stories and the exploration. This one is a little bit shorter because it is a fully edited video, like I said at the beginning. Even if you're listening on a podcast, I did edit a full video to go along with it. So, the next upload I will have in 2 weeks from now, it will be a longer audio-only upload. If you did enjoy this format, like I said, I do have a playlist on my YouTube channel of all my Liminal Earth videos. Thank you so, so much for tuning in. I will be back soon with more stories. Until next time, take care and good night.